Welcome to News Over Brews, the only podcast that breaks down the best of this week's pop culture over a nice cold beer. Sponsored by PopBreak.com. I am your host and moderator, Al Manarino. This week, we talk about the big changes happening to season 2 of Fargo, a 54-year-old Billboard record has been broken, and Jake Gyllenhaal looks crazy in the first trailer for Nightcrawler. With me, as always, is two people who are currently not at San Diego Comic-Con. Ryan DeMarco?
It's alright. Personally, I'd rather stay in New Jersey, actually.
And Lucas Jones.
I thought Comic-Con wasn't until October.
That's New York.
There's two Comic-Cons? I thought no, there was only one.
How do you not know about San Diego Comic-Con?
I mean, I'm the beer guy. I don't really do anything else around here. I just buy the beer and make the food, pretty much.
Let's just get right to it. Speaking of beer, why don't you tell us what we're drinking this week?
Well, Al, this week we're drinking a porter from Founders Brewing. It's called Founders Porter. It's billed as dark, rich, and sexy, right on the bottle. And that's pretty accurate. It pours a deep, deep black with a very creamy, very minimal dark tan, almost like a brown sugar head. Comes in at 6.5% alcohol by volume, 45 IBUs, and it's available year-round. And we actually did a little something special this week, Al. I know you're not here, and I'm sorry, but I used the beer to make a little something for Ryan and I. I used the beer as a marinade for some beef ribs, some center cut beef ribs, and marinated them for about an hour in a mixture of the beer, a little bit of watered down hickory barbecue sauce, a little bit of liquid smoke. I wanted something like watery, that I could like let it sit in, it would really soak everything up. And then I used that marinade as the base for a homemade barbecue sauce, which I simmered about 45 minutes and thickened down and basted the ribs with. So about 2.5 hours later, these beef ribs came out. Ryan?
They were good. No, they were awesome. I couldn't ask for a better dinner. Mm-hmm. And it went so well with this Founders Porter. They really complimented each other really, really well. And I remember asking you, like, what if this would have been better maybe with a lighter beer, and you instantly smacked me to the ground and you shot that down.
With half of an eaten pork or a beef rib. Yeah.
But no, this really what the roasted malts really, really accompanied the meat well. As I was ripping it apart like a savage barbarian, you simply just you take just a swig after each bite, and it just works so well. And you even point out the coffee aftertaste kind of with mm-hmm. the meat. But overall, it was a splendid meal, and we are finishing up the 6-pack as we speak. I loved it. Mm-hmm. What more can I say about perfection, really?
Right. I mean, it's nice because it has like a dark chocolate coffee taste to it. And most beef rubs and marinades have some kind of coffee thing to it. I didn't have you smell the beef rub that I have, but it has a very strong coffee aroma. So this beer went perfectly as a marinade for these beef ribs. And you can use it to marinate any beef. As for the beer itself, like I said, it's jet black. It's got this tan head. And your body is ready for this thick, heavy stout.
It's so warming, too. When you drink it, it really just kind of, warms you up. Mm-hmm. It's like you want to, just curl up under a blanket and just call it a night.
Well, and the thing is that your body and your taste buds get ready for this dark, heavy stout. And what you get is, a light... Now, when I say light, I mean, light-bodied, light feel, very refreshing. So you've got, these bitter notes, the dark chocolate, the coffee, and a little bit of the hop presence, too. And it all kind of rounds out to this dark, bitter experience without being really heavy and weighing you down, without being, so thick you can almost chew on it like some of the stouts that we've had before. So it's like a nice mix of dark, bitter, and light, refreshing.
It's silky smooth.
Yeah, like it says, it's, you know, it's silky smooth. So the nice thing about it is that it's good for winter or summer. You know, you can serve, if you put this beer on ice, you can absolutely have it at a barbecue because it's so light.
Yes.
You know, you wouldn't really want to be drinking like a nitro milk stout in 95 degree heat, but
but we did.
We have, and we will again. But this beer is a very, very good option for someone who's into dark, bitter beers, but also likes being outside in the summer. You know, I mean, that's pretty much all I have to say about it. I loved it. You know, I'm a sucker for this stuff, for this coffee, this dark, you know, and I always like to throw it in there. That roasted smokiness.
I'm tasting it right now.
Yeah, it's like, and it just finishes with that roasted smoky flavor that just kind of stays with you, and it it's good. It's really, really good.
Al, you missed another good one.
All I have to say is, are you trying to hurt me? Is it what you're trying to do?
Oh.
Slowly and week by week, yes.
You guys are killing me.
Yeah, pretty
you're
much.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Killing me.
I guess I'll just wrap it up by saying, you know, I really liked it. It's such a solid beer, and I'm so happy it's available year-round. This is actually the first time I've tried this. Shame on me, because I've had Founders KBS. I've had the Founders Breakfast Stout. I've had so many good beers from Founders. Shame on me for not trying a porter, which is a style that I really love. So I'm going to go ahead and give it an unbiased 8.5 out of 10. You know, a biased rating would be like a 12 out of 10, considering how much I love porters and how much I love dark beers. But an unbiased rating, you know, I'd have to give it an 8.5 out of 10. It's just a good, solid beer. If you like bitter, if you like dark, the coffee, the dark chocolate, you will really love this.
I'm going to go ahead and give it an 8. Same as Lucas, pretty much. Just tone it back a little bit. Really nothing terribly wrong with it. It went well with the meat. However, the only thing I will say is we don't have more of it.
I don't think that's fair to deduct from the score because we didn't buy enough.
I am not deducting it from the score because of that. Just an 8 in my book.
It's available in 6-packs. We picked it up for about $10.60. Available widely, so you should be able to find it if you're interested. Looking at you, Al Manarino.
Well, I'm definitely interested in trying the Founders Porter. I don't know how I'm going to pick up your specific ribs. I guess I'll have to just force you to make them for me when I get home.
Oh no, don't do that.
Well, yeah, you got me really hungry for those, even though I just ate. But besides the food, besides the beer, let's go right into the music news. Something awesome, something like ridiculously awesome happened the other day, and a really busy week for music. A 54-year-old record was broken. Luke, what happened?
Well, for music fans, the name Weird Al kind of like brings up this image of like a guy living on the fringes who like makes these parody songs that some people know and, you know, some people don't really know but never really caught on, and he just kind of, you know, doing his own thing. Well, Weird Al's new album, Mandatory Fun, reached number one on the Billboard chart, which is the first comedy record to make number one on the Billboard chart since 1960. And it's interesting that it's the first comedy record because, you know, well, Weird Al did an 8 music video in 8 day, kind of a barrage, and he spread himself around the internet. One day he was with Yahoo, one day with College Humor, one video with Funny or Die, and it was a really great marketing strategy, and he drummed up a lot of hype. And it's not just comedy, it's good music. You know, when you take... it's essentially like a remix. You know, think of any rap song that takes another person's music and then he just improvs over it. That's what Weird Al is doing. So in one sense it's comedy, but in another sense it's just more music. So that's what he did. That's the record. He took his comedy album to the top, and you know, I think that's great because it is really good music, but I also think that's a little sad because I think it's more than a comedy album. Weird Al's more than a comedy artist. He's a musician. It's a lot of skill. If you listen to some of those songs, the amount of skill that has to go into making his own words fit over somebody else's timing and music is just astounding. Do you guys see all 8 music videos?
I think I did see most of them. I think one of the standout ones would have to be Word Crimes. Now, it wasn't a music video in the sense that he was present or there was actors in anything, but it was a really... really well done lyric video for, you know, this Robin Thicke parody. But it was amazing. It should be in every single classroom. Like, teachers should actually be showing this video. Like, this is going to be like, you know, like Schoolhouse Rock kind of video to show to students, because it was all correct, you know? And it's not like he was like outlandish with any of his statements. He was pretty much being a grammar Nazi, and it worked. It really did. And that was just one of the highlights from the album. You know, he covered Lord, he covered Pharrell, which was the first video to kick it off with Tacky, which was hilarious. And I agree with you. It's not just parody. It's also really good music. I mean, this guy has been around since the 80s. His first big single was a parody of My Sharona. So when that was big, so what was that, like 1979? And then you got,
Early
80s, sorry. So he parodied Michael Jackson, you know, with a ton of times. I was really blown away by the strategy, like you mentioned, that he debuted a different video every day for 8 days straight on a different complete, like, website, too. Like, I don't know how he managed to do that, which was excellent. And it definitely worked in his favor. He became number one and broke a 54-year-old record, sold over 100,000 copies. And in this day and age, that's incredible for the music industry being as it is. So, Rye, did you watch any of the videos?
I am ashamed to say I have not watched one of his new ones. Unfortunately, I've been hearing about it this entire week, and I have to say, I do want to see it. And you guys are both giving me dirty, dirty, dirty looks right now, so I am sorry.
Well, I mean, my favorite video, I loved Word Crimes because of that everything was actually accurate. I loved, Al, you and I were talking earlier about the Foil music video, how it took like a left turn into Conspiracyville.
Illuminati.
Halfway through. I also loved the guest appearance by the Lieutenant Dangle, and I still cannot remember his name, from Reno 911, the mustachioed aviators cop. And I feel bad that I can't remember because he was one of my favorites. But my favorite music video was Tacky. And I think it's because I hate Happy so much. As music, I can't stand that song. It's too happy and it makes me angry. Nobody's that happy. So I thought Tacky was really cool because it, you know, kind of attacked some of the things that you see in, you know, kind of like around by a certain group. I won't call them out by name, hipsters, but, you know, it kind of attacked some of the things that they do and some of the things that other groups do too, you know, the outlandish fashion and certain things. But I really kind of dug that. And actually, what was it called? Sports Anthem? Sports Song? Was really funny too.
Yeah.
I really got a kick out of that because it just parodies every single sports fight song. So he's like a lyrical genius.
He really is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean that's it's just amazing, and it's really a shame that he's in a comedy category. I guess that's my final thought. Is I wish he was taken more seriously as an artist, which he should be.
Yeah, but I think the thing to take out of this was he really kind of resurrected the music video. I mean, that's what made him.
That's true too.
That's what made him popular. You know, all those years ago when he first started was when MTV was the thing. That was the biggest thing now. And it's weird, too, because music videos should probably still be popular, if not more, because of the internet. Because we watch videos all the time, whether it's small ones made on Instagram and Vine or, you know, YouTube or Vimeo. So it's weird that music video has kind of been this dying art form. And I can understand because MTV doesn't even play music videos anymore. And that's music television. So it's great to see that Weird Al, you know, not only is still making great music videos, but he was able to introduce 8 classics in a row. So I'm glad.
Well, I actually have a small comment real quick on that, actually, for two things. One, I've been getting into Portlandia recently. 3 seasons are up on Netflix, and I've been watching them through. And I caught the MTV episode where they try to retake MTV to play music videos again. And that got me thinking about, like, how MTV really did used to play music videos. It used to be music television. And the heyday of that was, you know, unfortunately, I think before all of our time. Like, we kind of caught the tail end of that. But, and I think one of the reasons that music videos aren't played anymore is because, you know, they're kind of dumb. You know, they're, as somebody who is...
A lot of them are suggestive, too, and...
Well, that, too, but, like, so think about... I'm going to take you guys to a place I know you don't like to go. The year is 1980. But, like, so 80, when you watch an 80s music video, we look at it and we laugh, but, like, what is an 80s music video? It's shots of the band doing ridiculous things, interspersed with, like, some kind of story that vaguely fits the song.
Metal sparks thrown in there somewhere.
Right, but something is, there's, like, a girl and there's a guy chasing the girl, and, like, something's happening. But, like, think of music videos that are today. What are most music videos made of today? Shots of the band playing the song.
Butts, boobies.
Butts shaking gratuitously. There's no content in the music video. It's all just visual stimuli. There's nothing to sit there and make you think. You know, gosh, there's a Great White song, and I can't think of it, but the song is about a guy trying to, like, get this girl out of his head, and the whole music video is the singer singing in a room while this girl kind of walks in and out of the background like she's there, but no one else can see her but him. So, like, that kind of a music video where it kind of represents what's happening, it adds to the song instead of just being, you know, generic visual stimuli. So I think, you know, that might be another reason, and that's why I liked Weird Al's music videos so much, because they really added to the music. Just something to think about. The 80s were the peak of all musical art form.
Shut up, Lucas.
Lucas, listen. Well, people, if you bring back the 80s one more time.
But no, and I joke, but seriously. I mean, I think music videos were much better because they tried. You know, there was this new format, and people wanted to do the best that they could with it. And now I feel like it's just so generic and useless that's why music television died out, because there's nothing, you're not missing anything by not watching a modern music video.
You're right, we're better off watching reality TV shows.
God, let's not talk about that. Let's just not, we're not going to get into that. Well, it was good to see Weird Al finally get the credit he was due with his first number one record, which is crazy. But if you haven't checked out his videos, you have to do it immediately. Go check out all 8. Will take you about 25 minutes. And you'll definitely laugh a lot. So, News Over Brews recommends it. Do it. Moving on to some television news, fans of the amazing FX series Fargo will be very happy to know that season 2 is happening. It's going to be the same creators, same writers that are all behind it, but it's got a little bit of a twist. Ryan, what's it about?
Well, FX's Fargo just wrapped in June to a fabulous first season, as you said, and it's going exactly the same route True Detective is going from HBO. It's going to have a whole new cast, whole new story, different time period, different location, yada yada yada. It's going to be different. That's pretty much the gist of it. It's going to be a whole new show come the beginning of next season. This was a particularly exciting news for me because I love that whole idea. This is a new idea, you know. It's pretty much you can get bigger stars now on these shows who are afraid to sign multi-contract deals for multiple seasons on a TV show. They can just, you know, like True Detective, they're going to get bigger names, and Fargo's going to get bigger names now. I love it. But Al, what's your take on this?
I love the entire concept of taking a story and a character that was mentioned in the show, take it back to that exact storyline. Like, I mean, you never really see that, where someone just kind of mentions something in passing in one episode, in one conversation, and make that the entire plot for the next season. That's great. I'm really excited to see how they can follow up such a great season. The only thing I'm worried about is the biggest draw for this this whole season one of Fargo, which was phenomenal, was Billy Bob Thornton. It was Martin Freeman. And I don't remember the girl who played Molly, but all three of them have been nominated for Emmys.
Yep.
Because they all had Emmy-nominated, you know,
show
Emmy, and
it's
Emmy-worthy
yeah, the show and all got 18 nominations. It's freshman year.
18 nominations, which is incredible. Don't get me wrong, but, you know, that's also, at the same time, I'm a little worried because how can they follow up such a great... Same thing with True Detective, though. I mean, Matthew McConaughey and Woody Harrelson, but mostly McConaughey, both of their performances were phenomenal. You're going to make a season two without those characters. Are you going to get the same... You're going to get that same effect? Are you going to be blown away by each episode? We don't know. We're going to have to wait and find out, but I'm really excited to see.
I think that's what they expect the fans, you know, that they're letting it out that, you know, it's not going to be the same characters that you love. It's going to be different. So, you know, have great expectations, but don't have the same expectations that you've been seeing. It's going to be a completely different creature on its own.
Yeah, but you're always going to get those comparisons. Yeah. You're always going to be like, oh, well, season one was better because of this. And, you know, season two's too different. I was expecting more of what we got in the first season. And you know what? A lot of fans are going to be like that. But, I trust these writers because they blessed us with these two great shows. It's crazy. If you really look at the Emmys, I mean, we're going to have some Emmy coverage, obviously, in a future episode. But you have the last year that Breaking Bad is eligible, which was a perfect season. Not many dramas end on a high note. Breaking Bad did. And this is the last year that they're eligible. Against True Detective, Fargo, House of Cards. I mean, this is one of the craziest Emmy seasons I think I've ever seen. So just look out for all of these shows that have all this buzz, you know, before the Emmys. I really don't know who's going to win.
It's a tight race. Excited.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, for fans that are excited for some more dark comedy in Fargo, you're gonna have an awesome second season, apparently. All right, we've reached the end of our podcast, and you know what that means? Trailer talk. This week, I wanted to do something really different and go for something that's probably not gonna have a wide release, something that's, you know, not a summer blockbuster, but it's also something that looks really, really interesting. Starring someone I never really liked that much, Jake Gyllenhaal, of all people. We got this like neo-noir kind of story called Nightcrawler. And Ryan, do you have any more info about it?
Everybody's favorite Gyllenhaal plays Lou Bloom, a news hungry man who he's searching for a job. He finds that his craft is, I guess, the news, reporting the news with a video, with a camera, actually. So he kind of finds himself delivering these stories to a news network. Rene Russo's in it, Bill Paxton's in it, and Gyllenhaal looks like he's taking on something he's never really done. I mean, he's like the McConaughey syndrome right now. He's taking on new roles and he's kind of like seeing himself in like a new light than he's been portraying in the past 10 years, I'd say. But his character becomes, I guess, so invested in freelance journalism, he begins to, well, when I guess the news gets a little dry, he begins to, as you put it, become the star of his own story. He starts to create trouble. I don't know exactly how, but he creates trouble and he starts reporting the news. And honestly, I don't know where the story will go from there. The teaser that they just released didn't explain a whole lot. It gave us a few key scenes with Gyllenhaal and a few of his co-stars, and just kind of gives you a glimpse of what he's capable of. With both the character-wise and Gyllenhaal's acting abilities. It was very interesting, though, I'll say that. I wasn't really expecting this. You kind of surprised me with it. You mentioned that this looks like, in comparison to Ryan Gosling's Drive, which I can see. I can see a few comparisons there. This definitely looks like something that will could possibly skyrocket Gyllenhaal up to like a serious contender for an Oscar. So the movie itself looks fantastic. Actually, I was really intrigued with it. His performance looks really great. His weight loss looks frightening. He looks like he he looks like a skeleton running around in a mullet. But
he's on the machinist diet.
He's on the machinist diet with a camera. It looks like a good film. I'm really excited about it. Actually, I texted you right after. I said, "Great! It looks like I'm going to start liking Jake Gyllenhaal now too." Expletive. So I really wasn't expecting that. Al, Lucas, your thoughts on the trailer?
Well, I mean, I liked it. I thought it was cool. You know, it does what a teaser trailer does. It gives you a little bit of information, and then it kind of, you know, leaves you hanging. It looks like it could... It has the potential, I guess, to fall victim to that stereotypical, like, guy gets too into his own thing. But I think that it looks like an interesting enough script, like an interesting enough idea, that will avoid falling into some of the tropes that we see from these thrillers. Like, I just really hope it doesn't hit that, like, M. Night Shyamalan twist at the end. Like, oh, you know.
It was a dream.
Yeah, or, you know, we all know what that's like. You know, I just kind of hope that it's, like, a really solid story.
Honestly, I feel like this movie is not going to pull those punches. I feel like it's going to be a Oscar-caliber movie that really is genuine with its storytelling. Mm-hmm. And it's not, like, it doesn't suffer from cheap thrills. Honestly, that's what I got from it. What do I know? It's just a teaser. Keep going.
And, I mean, I'm excited to see what Jake Gyllenhaal can do with the role. You know, he's displayed some pretty decent acting chops throughout his career. Right. He's not taken seriously, I think, just because he's a little off-putting sometimes. I know one moment in the trailer when he first breaks the fourth wall, I was like, holy fourth wall, Batman. I'm like, if you're going to break it, be a little gentler with it, you know? Maybe kind of get a little bit in first and then, like, sneak it in first.
Nah,
he just kind of goes right in. And then, I thought it was great. Al?
It looks like one of the recurring themes of this movie is he's desperate for work. And he, you know, I mean, obviously he's doing freelance. And, you know, he's kind of, throughout the whole movie, he's kind of narrating. And he's saying, like, his job, almost like what he says in a job interview. And actually, before this trailer was... before this trailer was released, there was this viral teaser of just him saying his like little spiel that he does in this, you know, a longer version of it with, he's saying it to like a few different people. And it shows you in the trailer too, that it keeps cutting to different scenes where he's saying that same thing. So I'm really interested to see that social commentary of, you know, struggling to find a job and doing anything to get ahead in life. Because I think all of us can, you know, relate to that in a way. And, I mean, I'm like Ryan said it 12 times, and he kind of said what I really wanted to say was, I mean, this could be Gyllenhaal's, this could be his Oscar right here. Or this could be what Drive did to Ryan Gosling and made him an actor that everyone wants to go see whenever he has a new movie. So... you know me, I love neo-noirs. I'm so excited to see this film. It just looks so dark and desperate and looks perfect. I can't wait. So it's going to be premiering at the Toronto International Film Festival in September. And then it opens everywhere October 17th. So you should definitely keep an eye out on this movie. It's probably not going to be in every theater. It probably won't be in the theater around the block from you, but you might have to go drive and see it, and it might be worth it. So,
on a side note, sorry to cut you off, Al. On a side note, if you're interested in the other movies in the lineup for the Toronto Film Festival, we posted it on our Facebook page, so check that out, too.
Yes. Good call, Ryan. Check that out as well. A lot of these film festivals are going to be having some insane movies, and Toronto International Film Festival is one of the big ones, so I would definitely check that out on our Facebook page. And that's going to wrap it up here for another episode of News Over Brews. I'm Al Manarino, and I'm going to have to get another beer.
I'm Brian DeMarco, and I might not go down in history, but I'd go down on you.
And I'm Lucas Jones, and I'll probably have to cut that out.
Thanks for listening.